I'm sorry, reform will come to order. Mr. Barrier, would you come to the end of the table, please? You have before you, my friends, the draft of 41283. Bill, would you go through it page by page? And we're going to, I'm going to ask at the end of each page for a motion to pass that page or pass the section, I guess is the correct thing. Any changes in 100?
There are no change in 010.
Any comments from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, just I know Senator Kelly raised the point, and I don't care either way, but I know he feels like that word must should be should. And I would, I'll just move that as courtesy to him. I think it's okay. So.
Object. Okay. How does the Senate feel?
It's about operating.
It's a wash, right? It doesn't matter. It'll stay must. It was moved that must shall change to shall, but it lost
so
for lack of vote.
It must be must.
Can I have a motion on section 010?
Move to approve. Draft 412.
We lost it. Move to approve section 010 as drafted. Any objections?
Well,
we've already done that, sir. 010 is approved as written. Mr. Barrier?
The only change in 020 is a change that you'll find on page 14 and 15, line 2. I don't think it's necessary, but there was some strong indication that people felt more comfortable if it said specifically that they do not supersede the or repeal provisions of the criminal law, the state provisions of this chapter. So that is added language, and it's only changed in section 2.
Move.
It's been moved to approve section 020. Any objections? Section 020 is approved as written. Mr. Barrier?
Section 030. There were two deletions. I deleted the same phrase both times. If you look at line 24, page 2, the phrase, if the commission determines as to a specific matter, mm-hmm. The phrase, the commission determines, was removed, and again on page 3, line 3, the term the commission, if the commission determines, or rather the term the commission determines, was
to approve.
It's been moved to approve section 030. Any objections? Section 030 is approved as changed in this draft. Mr. Barrier?
In section 2460040 on page 3, there are two changes. Sub 1 was changed to a two-tier level, as it appears in the current law, and a new definition was added to section B defining direct or indirect financial benefits. And incidentally, I'd like to point out there's a typo on line 25. In Sue should be in Muir. Those are the only changes to 040.
I'd like the committee to read section 2 carefully to see if it says what everybody wants it to say.
Chair, just for the record, Jeff, I still got a kind of problem with that one, but I don't.
You know, Mr. Miller, I got a feeling that one is going to get changed somewhere along the line. We've had so much trouble with it. It's my feeling. Just let it go with that, and whatever happens out there in the world is fine with me.
Yeah, that's fine. That's kind of my thought.
If that's all they dwell upon, I'll be very happy. But do look at section 2 and before we move to this section.
Madam Chairman, I would just like to say that I don't think it's going to make any one of us happy, but it is what we collectively agreed on. Question about that?
I would like our resident attorney to assure us that says what we wanted to say.
He wrote it.
He assures us.
You know, it.
Can I have a motion, please?
I move to approve 040.
Any objections to approving 040? Very good. Mr. Barrier?
I have no changes to 050.
Move to approve 050. Any objections? 050 is approved.
There are no changes to 060.
Hang on just a second. Section G, didn't somebody say there was a typo in this? Representative Miller,
no,
did
that's,
you?
That's over on page 9.
All right, sorry, sir. Okay, section G, does that meet with everybody's definition for a state program? I just want to double check this. This is page 5, lines 5, 6, and 7, and 8. Okay, we have approved this section already, but I just wanted to call that to your attention. All right, 060, sir.
060, there was no change.
Move to approve 060. Any objections? 060 is approved?
070, there's no change.
Okay. Can I have a motion to approve 070?
Move to approve 070.
Any objections? 070 is approved.
080, there is a change. On page 6, line 2, following the word gift, the phrase "in any amount" was added. That is purely a clarifying phrase.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I don't want to dwell on it, but I'd just like to move that we delete lines 20 through 23. I just don't think the commission ought to be establishing policies that limit the extent to which persons may accept the benefits set out of B2. B2 is the discounts, and I don't know what in the world the commission is going to be concerning themselves about, whether I'm qualified for an Eagle fare or an employee discount at a hotel or what. So I'm sorry I wasn't at the meeting where this was added, but I don't understand why we're concerning ourselves with having the commission establish policies regarding discounts that in fact are generally available to the public.
All right, Mr. Berry, can you comment on that? There is a motion to delete section C, page 6, lines 20, 21, 22, 23, is that correct, Representative Miller?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, it's basically a clear policy question as to whether the commission should be authorized to require that these discounts be paid over to the state or whether they should not. Deleting it would delete the authority to do this, leaving it leaves the authority to do this, so it's basically just a pure policy question as to whether the commission should be able to do it.
What's the feeling of the committee? Is there debate here?
Madam Chairman, I feel that...
Are you out there, committee? Representative Lopper?
But we should leave it in. So I'm in direct opposition to my friend to the left.
Representative Phillips?
Could you restate the issue again? I mean, restate it again. I think I heard what you said, but it's fine.
Madam Chairman?
Please, Mr. Berry.
It's essentially the question as to whether the commission should be able to require the various discounts that are generally available to the public be turned over to the state. For example, to use the airfare, which keeps being cited, if you got one of those special airfare trips, should they be allowed to require that you turn that into the state?
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir, please. Representative Miller?
Let's use the airfare as a couple of examples. If I traveled under Western's old policy and was entitled to one of these Amigo fares, who cares whether I got an additional Amigo fare so I could go to Mexico for $100? What would you turn over to the state? My little coupon or what? Similarly, they have employees discount, I mean spouse discounts. All of these are available to the general public. And if I, as a member of the legislature, want to fly to Alaska to Anchorage on legislative business, and might think it's kind of nice to take my wife along at an employee's discount, what possible business is it of the commission's even to have the authority to limit that discount or make me turn that over to the state? Or if I want to stay at the hotel in Anchorage while I'm there, what possible business is it of the commission's if I get a, whatever it is, a 5% or 7%, government rate that we always ask for and always receive, just like every other public employee gets? I just don't know why we're in this area of...
Representative Miller, let me just give you my personal experience with this Amigo fare thing, and let me tell you kind of where I'm coming from. I went up to Anchorage, and because I wanted that Amigo fare, I paid my own way, everybody, but I felt if I had gotten that ticket paid by the state, I would have felt a little guilty about it because I needed to go to Anchorage, and it was 95% legitimate, but that 5% was in my heart for that Amigo fare. And so for that 5%, I paid my own ticket. I just didn't feel right about it. But if the commission would say, there's that feeling that, did I go for the Amigo fare, could I have made a telephone call instead? So I think that we're letting the commission decide here that, yes, it's okay across the board, or no, it's not. And that's just my own personal feeling on it. I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, and I feel if the general public can get those things, the state employees or the legislature should too, but it's the question of, did I need to go up there, or did I just want to go up there, I guess?
Madam Chair, every job or junket, if we want to use the popular phrase, opens up that question. There's a hearing on prison reform in conjunction with the NCSL next year. Do I want to go, or do I just want a free trip to Minneapolis? But that's between me and my constituency. I mean, all that information is available, it's all public, whatever, whenever we travel, it's a public record. how much the state gives us back in per diem and travel expenses and one thing another. That's all a public record. And I think that's, if I abuse that, I suspect somebody from the press or something else will find out about it pretty quick and will blow the whistle. And frankly, this is going to set up us as a special group. All the other, the judiciary will be able to take a hotel discount if the commission decides that isn't appropriate. All the public employees will, every salesman takes a salesman's discount. But 60 legislators, once again, are getting out, barbed whips and beating ourselves. It's just ridiculous.
Representative Phillips and Representative Walker.
Well, the reason I asked to restate the issue itself is that I think we're concentrating too much on this Western Airlines legal thing. I think we ought to, if you start zeroing in, from that point of view, Mike, I don't think we ought to. But there's other issues involved. The Amigo fare, I think there's a sweetheart ferry. I think it's one of the airlines has it. Take your wife or your sweetheart for half the cost or whatever it is.
Well, now why shouldn't the legislator take his wife?
Well, all I'm stating is
for half the cost.
All I'm stating is that, we shouldn't just zero in on the Amigo fares. There's other things, and I probably would go along with your argument, but if you just zero in on the Amigo fares, I'd say absolutely no.
Yes, Representative.
We discussed this once before, and I mentioned then, and I'm going to say it again, that hardly ever are these little kickers for the exact same price as it would have been if they weren't there. Now, on the Amigo fare, you had to pay full fare. You could not fly Super Saver. Right there, that says that your ticket costs over $100 more. Then you paid the little bit of difference for the Amigo ticket. Okay, now I don't know how the spouse and Alaska Airlines worked out, but quite often there's a little extra something that you have to pay for this kicker. And when Mike talks about getting a discount at a hotel, now if the state is paying your hotel room and they get a discount, that's great. But if they get a discount, they give it to you and you charge the state full fare and pocket that 10%, then it's not great. We're just talking about the state.
You get a per diem, whether you stay at the...
At your friend's house.
At your friend's house, or the cheapest hotel in town, or at the Sheraton, which is... now you pay $80-some dollars for a night's lodging.
I guess I have a real problem with people getting any sort of kicker, because hardly ever does it come for the exact same price. And then add to that the fact that you might be traveling when you didn't need to, at a time that you wouldn't normally do it.
Senator Josephson?
I have mixed feelings about this. I think that the hotel situation is perfectly acceptable because there is a flat per diem, and if one employee has a friend and wants to save the money, fine. If another employee wants to enjoy the Captain Cook Hotel and they offer a discount to all government employees, usually municipal, federal, and state, I don't see any reason why the employee shouldn't benefit from that. I mean, if we don't do that, then we ought to say that out of straight per diem, you ought to go eat at McDonald's and you shouldn't eat at a nicer restaurant because that's somehow corrupt. But on the Amigo fare, I think that there is a problem, and I think the chair mentioned it, which is the inducement to fly. Though, for example, in that situation, there's a crash period that you have to travel before, by your tail before a certain date. And as Representative Locker said, you have to pay a full fare ticket. And there could be an incentive to not buy your ticket long enough in advance so that the state pays the full non-discounted rate, or an incentive to travel when travel was not necessary. There has also been, in that situation, considerable editorial comment. If you remember, when Senator Sackett raised the point, some editorials wrote in praise of that, and then there was an argument about whether there was an existing legal authority to do it. So I do see that. And what this points up is that we can't anticipate all the cases. And frankly, I think we're better off if we have a commission to establish policies, because then we'll know what is permissible and what's impermissible, and we can do that. We don't have to worry about it or guess about it. So I'd like to leave the language.
I see that there's not sufficient 2 votes out of 3 in each body, so I'll withdraw the motion. Just remember that you heard it here. By authorizing this within this little bureaucracy we're establishing, believe me, there will be regulations promulgated. There'll probably be a whole book.
Okay, but if it succeeds through the rest of the committees that it has to go through, and Representative Miller, I know you're going to be there bringing this particular section up again. So, and I also like the informality of this committee that allows us to rediscuss it. Some people might think we're a little redundant, but boy, this is important. And I think the opportunity of everybody getting to have one last shot at it is perfectly acceptable in my book. A motion on 080.
Chairman, I move 080.
Any objections? 080 is moved. Mr. Barrier.
Oh, I know there's no change.
A motion from 090.
Chairman, move 090.
Hearing no objections, 090 is moved. Now, got to point out, this is where your mother, father, sister, brother thing, and no problems there. Page 7, lines 2 and 3.
This relates, of course, to hiring.
Yes, I understand. Okay. 100, sir.
100, there's no change.
Motion to approve 100. Any objections? Hearing none, 100 is approved. Mr. Barrier?
110, there's no change.
Senator Fahrenkamp had a question about this concerning the order here, that you would resign. She thought it was you resign first or you divest, and the word immediately disturbed her. You have to immediately divest of an interest. Sometimes that's difficult to do. Does the committee have any problems with this? After the section was explained to her, there seemed to be no problems with Senator Fahrenkamp. I just want to double check everything. Motion for 110.
Sure.
All right. Hearing no objections, 110 is approved. 112?
120, there is no change.
Motion for 120?
Chairman, move 120.
Hearing no objections, 120 is approved. 130,
there is no change.
I have a question here. Member of the press brought this up, and I think it might be a good point for the committee to state. In number one, it's very specific that the president of the Senate appoints a member from the Senate. Section 2, Speaker of the House appoints a member from the House of Representatives. But 3 and 4 do not specifically state that they are not members of the legislature. They are just citizens of the United States.
Section F takes care of that. It says a member of the commission may not hold or seek elective office. And
it says the public member, but I guess in a state...
Well, there is an exception to that for legislators, you know, later on.
For B1 and B2, B1 the exception doesn't cover the others.
Yes, I know that, but my point is, should it be in Section 3 and 4 that these are public members or the public member, a non-member of the legislature, should that wording be in there, sir?
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
No, it should not.
Oh.
The reason is, it's a pure redundancy because under F, a member of the commission may not hold or seek elected public office. I've got a numbering error. Correct.
Yeah.
We dropped a section. This should be the provisions of F.
Yeah. Instead of E, I was giving it up.
Do not apply to the members under B1 and B2. Under that, obviously, the only way a legislator could qualify under those sections would be to resign.
Okay. You answered my question. I hope the member of the press is here and heard that. Do I have a motion on 130?
Move to approve.
130 is moved to approve.
With the change.
With the typo change from E to F on page 9, line 13. Okay. Hearing no objections, 130 has been approved. Mr. Barrier.
There is no change in 140. Yes, there is. On page 10, on line 9, annual was changed to semi-annual.
Very good. Motion for one. Yes, sir. Section 140 has been moved. Hearing no objections, it is adopted.
150, there is no change.
Okay, I have a question. It says the last line of 150, I studied my bill this time through. On section 150, the last line is except if provided in this chapter, an advisory opinion is confidential. I'm having a little bit of trouble in my head figuring out when the informal advisory opinions come in and when the advisory opinions come in. Could we go through that one more time for my little Polish head?
The advisory opinions are opinions given at the request of the legislator or the person affected by the chapter. There is no distinction between informal and formal advisory opinions. And there was a decision by the commission that the advisory opinions would remain on the confidentiality thing. This was gone through last time. Maybe it'd be better to summarize it now. I'll summarize it very rapidly.
Okay.
There was a decision at the summary that the advisory opinions would remain confidential. Should the advisory opinion not be complied with, you immediately go to the complaint procedure. With the complaints, you have three areas. In each case that a complaint is filed, the disposition of the complaint is immediately public, i.e. there is or is not a violation. In situations where it is found that there is no violation, then the file itself remains confidential. In cases that it is found there is a violation, the files are released after 30 days, which is to give the legislature time back. So I think you have to consider all four of those together to make sense.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Any more comments? Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, too, Madam Chair. I think we ought to change the period in line 24 from period to a comma and say, except that a person requesting an advisory opinion may make that public.
Yes.
At his or her option. I'd put two accepts in the same line, so you probably would want to say that. But.
Yeah, but the idea is clear. Let's
You want to say accept is provided in this chapter or at the direction of the person requesting the.
I think I've got the idea, so perhaps you let me work on the language to remove the awkwardness. I don't have any problem with understanding the thought.
Madam Chair, I'll move it to move 150 as conceptualized with this change.
Fine. It's been moved that 150 with a conceptualized change be adopted. Any objections? Very good. Mr. Barrier?
Under 160 on page 11. the new language is, let me read the whole sentence because it doesn't make much sense just to read the new language. The commission may investigate a violation of this chapter in a proceeding begun within blank years after the alleged violation occurs and within 1 year after termination of state service. The direction of the commission was to leave that time period blank. I had mentioned earlier that at least as the legislators, it appears in the Adam Clayton Powell case that the court feels the legislature does not have authority to punish for matters that occurred in a prior legislature. Would mean if you wanted to tie with that a 2 year period would probably be reasonable. But
Senator,
well, that's easy enough to see in terms of the House of Representatives. But the Senate is a continuing body with 4 year terms.
Is that
It strikes me as a little bit odd that a person could be elected to the Senate for a 4 year term and not be answerable in the last year of his term for something he did earlier in the term. Does the Powell case suggest that can't be done?
Bearing the Powell case does not.
Bearing in mind that the Senate would be the judge of the qualifications of its own members, I would think the Senate would want to have cognizance of anything that occurred during the term that member is serving. Now, if you've gone to the people and at least there was an opportunity, theoretically, for your opposition to make a case against you, and you win the election anyway, and whether they brought up the matter or not, that might be conceptually different.
Mr. Barrier?
Madam Chairman, I don't know that this has ever actually been stated, but I think it's been rather clearly implied at all times. This creates a commission and gives the commission certain authority. It does not limit the plenary power that each House has over its own members. In other words, entirely apart from this, even though this were on the books, the House or the Senate still retains its full disciplinary action against the members on any grounds it considers appropriate, as long as not on constitutional grounds.
Mr. Barrier, what would be the problem in relationship to the Adam Clayton Powell case to go 2 years for the House of Representatives and 4 years for the Senate, or is that unwieldy?
That would be very unwieldy, I would think. What I could do, if you preferred it, but it'd be some difficulty with the language. Remember, you've got really three things to consider. One, there's a 4 year term in members of the Senate, a 2 year term in members of the House. And don't forget that employees of the legislature don't have a term. We're here from the time we start to work till we either resign or get fired. So if you're attempting to make that distinction, I would suggest that this isn't language. That for a legislator, you make it during the term in which the violation occurred.
Okay.
And within 1 year after termination of state service. And with the employees, I think if you want to set a time, that it would have to be set in a period of specific years.
How does our resident attorney feel about that?
Well, I apologize. I haven't read the Powell case in many years. But it bothers me a little bit, though. Madam Chair, on the basis that here we are in
April of 1983, if I were not a freshman again, but had served last time, your language would mean that the commission could not look into my conduct in 1982. And since most of this kind of conduct is going to be concealed or hidden from public view, that seems to me it means that I benefit by my own deviousness in concealing my wrongdoing from the public. And if I can just get by the next election, and you can say that there is plenary power, but in point of fact, a legislator would squawk that it would be unreasonable, that there was an orderly process set up by the commission, and it would be unreasonable for the Senate or House to sanction a member when they didn't go through the commission process in an orderly way. That's a practical argument.
Mr. Berry?
Senator Josephson, touched off a point that I consider vital in it as far as the impact of the Adam Clayton Powell case. The commission doesn't punish, it only investigates. The Adam Clayton Powell case would apply to legislators as to what could be done as a result of this investigation, with or without this. So if you set a fixed period such as 5 years, you would not be in violation of the Adam Clayton Powell case, because here you're dealing only with the commission action and its recommendations. Then when you get what sanctions may be taken as a result of that, you have to worry about the Powell case. So you could set a flat term of years with no problem.
For discussion purposes, I would move to insert the figure 4 on line 3.
It's been moved that we insert the figure 4 in line 3 on page 11. Any discussion? Hearing no objections, then we'll insert line 4 and have it. Yes?
I just have a mouthful.
Wave your hand more excitedly.
Well, okay. Right, let me just review this. What was wrong with the conceptual amendment for the term that the legislator serves instead of the 4 years?
Okay, what's wrong with it is what I just said, that it's like a sanctuary if you can get elected.
That's right.
Okay, I just want to review it. So
if you can win the election and take your oath in your term, you have a safe sanctuary for anything you did the prior year. I don't think that's reasonable.
What about Nixon? Where would he be?
He would have been clear.
Yes, right.
Been clear as far as this. Now, we understand that there are criminal penalties and all of that, but actually he was never prosecuted anyways for criminal purposes. Right. And there is the residual authority to impeach, but I think that once this machinery gets in vogue, that's going to be it. And I don't think that it would be very hard for the legislature to say, well, we're going to take this up. The commission doesn't have jurisdiction.
So basically you're saying 5 years, right? Plus 1 year after termination.
No, both. There are two different conditions. The 4 years applies always. Mm-hmm. And if you have left state service, it has to be within 1 year. So that if you're gone from the scene for more than a year, they can't reach back, which I think is fair enough.
Right, Mr. Berry, you made a point earlier that we need to have something in here about the employees, the legislative employees.
No.
We're okay here?
Senator Josephson, as he was discussing, it clarified my own thinking of the distinction between the commission action and the legislative action, so that's no longer necessary.
Okay. And yes,
that amendment passes.
Yes, the amendment passes, and it's 4 on page 11, line 3.
And, Madam Chairman, there's another change in this paragraph. That's during the 60-day period prior to the election. The number of members of the commission that are required to initiate a complaint has been changed to 5. That's on line 8, page 11.
Is there any other discussion on section 160? Oh, my goodness. It's a long section.
We get all the way to page 13. We're still in that section.
Okay. I tell you what. Let's go by subsections here. On 160, any objections to moving out A, B, and C? All right, hearing no objections, A, B, and C is moved out in section 160. All right, we're on section D now.
D, there is no change.
Okay. May I hear a motion for section D, subsection D?
I'm going to move subsection D.
Are there any objections? Subsection D is adopted. We're on subsection E.
EFG. I move EFG.
Okay, EFG has been moved.
There's no change in any of those.
Hearing no objections. All right, EFG have been adopted. We're on the bottom of page 12 in section H, Mr. Berryer.
Under section H, the so-called laundry list of penalties were included. If you start on line 6, page 13, to the period in line 10. Well, actually, no, the laundry list itself, the language, including imposition of civil penalties. No, the whole thing is actually rewritten. Starting through line 6 down through line 10.
All right, I had one more comment from someone who was talking to me about this. Excuse me. And that is, when the decision or the order, as Mr. Barrier calls it, is forwarded to the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate, what happens to that order? Yes, Mr. Barrier.
Again, to make a distinction, the order is not what's forwarded to the presiding officer. The decision is, which contains statement of facts and all of the information.
Oh, okay, the decision. Then what happens to that?
That is presumably referred to a committee, or, and there was a very deliberate determination, they did have that. There is a deliberate determination that, considering the matter, the body would probably want to set up an ad hoc procedure, such as establish an ad hoc committee, and I think the body would actually want to look at the procedure, and that would vary depending on the circumstances as to how the body would deal with it.
Okay, the comment was made that, in fact, then that decision would be confidential, or unless we say something specifically in here, the presiding officer, one, doesn't spread it on the journal, or basically speaking, the public, I know the way the rumors fly around here, the public would know that a decision has been come down. But what we're looking for in here is, should there be something in here that states the order is spread on the journal, or a decision is handed down, or I just bringing this out for the committee to discuss? Yes.
Madam Chairman, that wouldn't be necessary, because remember, the order
is public. Yes.
I would assume that the presiding officer would form, let's say, an ad hoc committee or refer it to judiciary committee,
and that have to
and
be
would
the journal.
Refer the violation as it's contained in the order.
And that ad hoc committee would have to be spread on the journal?
Yes.
Okay, so basically speaking, it's done. It is spread on the journal.
The committee actions almost certainly would have to be public.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to clear that up. Thank you, sir.
On line 18, a new sentence was added, as the employees. I frankly consider it redundant, but if you want to, because you guys can fire us anytime you want to for any reason anyway, but if you prefer it.
We like it, Mr. Barrier.
Doesn't do anything because you can do it anyway.
All right, is there any further discussion on Section H?
Madam Chairman, I move Section H.
All right, Section H has been moved. Is there any objections? Are there any objections? All right, Section H is adopted.
I had just explained the change, and I forgot I'm going by Section.
All right.
Chairman, I move the approval of Section I,
hearing
page 13.
Hearing no objection, Section I, page 13 is approved.
There is a change, Madam Chairman, to J.
Yep.
It was suggested by Mr. Quinelli and definitely seems proper to change it. Is guilty of misuse of confidential information under AS 1156-86. This has the advantage of putting this into a well-recognized, thought-out framework.
I think the press refers this to their particular little clause, and they're very pleased with this change. Are there any objections to moving J? Yes, sir?
Madam Chair, I move Section J.
Objection? Yes. When you said that the press considers this their favorite section, I had a press person tell me today that he wanted it applied to him, and I told him that that was never our intent. Our intent was to control the commission and the people making the choice. I realize they didn't truly understand that, but I'm just kind of goading them a little, and they're not even paying attention to me. So I don't. All right, it's been moved. Section J has been moved. Are there any objections?
I'm moving the objection.
All right. Representative Phillips.
One more point. Effective date.
Yes, sir. Open the effective date is up for discussion.
Well, for purpose of discussion, I'll move a motion here. Proposed amendment.
Just for formality, you might adopt the definition of commission in 170.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Saves me a lot of draft.
I withdraw my then.
No, there's no motion on the floor, so we're all right. Could I have discussion on 170?
I move to approve 170.
It's been moved to approve 170. Mr. Barrier, you had a comment. You think we need a better definition?
No. I was commenting that we need that definition, because otherwise I have spread that all over the island every time it comes.
Fine. All right. Any objections to approving 170? Very good. 170 has been approved. Representative Phillips.
Okay. I'm for purpose of discussion. I'll move that the effective date takes place when the second session of the 13th legislature convenes.
been moved that the effective date will be the opening day of the second session of the 13th legislature. Discussion?
Let me ask that a question. I should apologize to Senator Kelly because he had a similar idea and I didn't react negatively to that. But why wouldn't we want to make this effective as soon as possible?
July 1st.
I mean, if one of the purposes here is to get a machinery in motion, and of course the commission confirmation process can't take place, that part wouldn't be implementable until the session. But insofar as we set out standards and rules, we could do that.
Well, good mention.
Representative Phelps.
You know, it is going to take time to set up the commission. It is going to take time to establish offices. It is going to take time for legislators and the public to know where we stand. And that's the reason for the 6 months. To educate ourselves what we can or cannot do and everybody understand, the rules and regulations.
Please, Senator.
Well, except that on whatever date the law becomes effective, whether it's January, July, May, you have to start from scratch. I mean, the time that you don't have a system where you can get the commission working and then have it ready to go in January. They can't be confirmed. They can't be appointed and confirmed until sometime in January 84, under this effective date. As far as the time to educate ourselves, I don't know what to say about that, but I don't know.
What do you... Madam Chair?
Please.
I have no problems personally. I mean, it could be tomorrow, as far as I'm concerned, or even yesterday, but there's going to be probably other legislators, I don't know what they have in their business life or professional life, that they have to sort out, and it may take time to sort it out with this. It's no personal thing for me, but I'm thinking for the others.
Is it possible somehow, and as a freshman, people are going to have to tell me this, to put in that the commission, to get the mechanism started, but the actual provisions of the act do not become effective until the first day of the 13th legislature. I think Senator Kelly is concerned about the provisions of the act for business reasons, to give people, as you say, the time to divest or do whatever they run around and get it in the journal, whatever they need to do. But I agree with Senator Josephson that I'd like the mechanism to start. I'd like people to start working with this. Is there somehow we can do that?
Oh, yeah, we can list the sections and then it applies to the legislators.
Representative Miller?
I was going to say, among possibly others, section 130, the creation of the Ethics Commission, section 2460-130, could become effective immediately. So the appointments could even be made in this city and the legislature if the presiding officers so desired. And then we could make the balance, or most of the balance of the bill effective, say, July 1. At least those people could come on board and they could start the mechanism process that you're talking about. I greatly fear if we make it effective date for the whole bill the first of next year, what we're doing in real life is just wiping out the next session, too, because by the time they get appointed and then buy staff and then hire staff and then start doing their regulation bits and everything else, they won't be able to do anything until about the last week of the session. So if we really want them to be on the job by the first of next year, or the process to start, I think we ought to make the creation of immediate. And perhaps the appointment process isn't going to be that simple. It might not get the job done, but at least we give it a try. And then I'd like to see the whole thing be in motion then by July 1. Seems to me that's doable.
Representative Miller, the chair is amenable to your suggestion. If you'd like to make a motion, sir.
Yeah, I'll make that motion. Section 2460-130, the effective date to be immediate. And that the
140.
And 140, what's 140?
140.
And then the balance of the bill would become effective July 1.
All right, what I did is I did a faux pas in procedure. We had a motion on the floor to have the effective date on the second session of the 13th legislature. Do we have objections to that? I object.
Well, I guess I object.
I object, okay. Motion fails. Representative Filler.
I'll move what I just moved.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry about that.
Okay, what was the motion again?
The motion was that sections
2461.
130 takes effect.
130 and 140 takes effect immediately, and the balance of the bill would take effect July 1.
Well, now, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
You know, by the time this bill passes, I think it's going to be July 1st anyway. I'm sort of half kidding, half serious, but I don't think that's it with that. I don't think. I just think that for me, if I had to vote for this just for myself, perspective, I think we ought to just give them some time to take care of their own personal matters as regards to this piece of legislation that the cans and cannot do's or do's and don'ts or whatever you want to call it. I'm just thinking in that term. But maybe I'm off the wall.
Center?
That's what I think.
Well, I'd like to I have a problem with the motion in the way it's worded. If they're going to have, if you make 140 effective, they would have the power to subpoena witnesses and take testimony from and after July 1. Well, the legislators wouldn't even be covered by the other provisions of January 1. So
January 1 has no place in the motion at all.
July 1. You want everything effective. Mm-hmm.
Everything would happen July 1.
Oh, I misunderstood. Okay.
Mr. Barrier?
But this 4 taking effect immediately wouldn't matter because there couldn't be anything before the commission under the other provisions.
Okay, so the only choice we have, Madam Chair, is between July and January. Is that
correct?
No, there's another.
There's another option?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
Which incidentally is contemplated as the normal, would you be to have these, you're worried about allowing regardless of when it passed a certain amount of time. If you didn't use any effective date at all, if you took 130 and 140 and made an immediate effective date and did not use an effective date, the Constitution 90 days would come in and become 90 days after the act.
Brilliant.
Do you like that?
Would you, okay. Yeah, the only problem is you could the Speaker and the President can't appoint. Well, I see, could they do that during the interim, though?
No,
they can't either because they're going to have a vote of 3/4 of the
No.
3/4 and 2/3.
What I'd suggest was that Section 130 and 140 become effective immediately.
Oh, and the balance.
And there'd be no effective date as to the balance.
That's okay. That sounds great.
Would you like to amend your
motion? Yeah, I'll withdraw the prior motion and move that the 131.
Going to represent the Phillips argument, I would think that 90 days would, people get appointed by the President of the United States and like Mr. Ruckelshaus, and they take office with complicated portfolios in less than 90 days. I think 90 days is sufficient.
I can invest myself in all of
none of us have any of that. Madam Chairman, all I can say that I don't think this bill is going to be a problem to anybody. We're just giving it too much credibility. It's not that it isn't a good bill, but it's certainly nothing that I'm sure that probably
Representative Locker, the hue and cry that you will hear.
You'll hear it.
That we
you'll
have hear. Balls and chains around everybody's eye. How much could you like to bet? Well, never mind.
Well, I've already got a drink right now.
Okay. It's been moved that Section 2460, 130, and 140 take effect immediately. No objections? That effective date has been moved. Okay, guys, congratulations. Representative Phillips?
I'd like to make a... Well, first of all, we better move. Can we just move the whole bill? Or,
if you want.
I just feel a little more comfortable that way. Madam Chairman, I'll move that we recommend to the legislature and introduce a House bill and a Senate bill with the same contents as this proposed draft of 4/12/1983, hopefully by Thursday or Friday this week before the deadline. I ask unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent is given, Representative Phillips. Yes.
Yeah. Can I make a comment here?
Please.
I feel, you know, we put in a lot of work, a lot of time and stuff on this draft. It's not perfect, but I just felt like we're a bunch of, the six of us were glazers trying to put up, you know, glass, and everybody's throwing rocks at it, trying to break it, and we broke quite a few panes. But this time, I hope that we got this as a bulletproof glass. It may have a few scratches on it, but I hope it, you know, would take care of most of the concerns of the legislature, plus protect the public interest. So far, I know this is not a perfect bill, but I think it comes close to balancing our concerns plus the concerns of the public. That's all I can say.
I would like to publicly thank every member of the committee. I'm sorry Senator Kelly isn't here because he was a very valuable and integral part of the committee, but I would most like to thank Mr. Barrier, who probably dropped everything in the last 7 days to do this. And I really, really appreciate it. You came in late on this because we spent a lot of time with the Attorney General, and they deserve our gratitude and thanks, too. But particularly for coming in at the end and working through all those drafts, we really appreciate that, Mr. Barrier. That's duty above and beyond.
Yeah, I appreciate it, too.
I think I may assume that I have a request to deliver finals to each of you.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Phillips, what's next?
Well, I just had with
it. Sort of anticlimactic.
Yeah. I went through the NCSL notes, and I was struck by the fact that this bill is very much in harmony with their findings and their recommendations. And I might say, embarrassingly, I didn't read their recommendations before we took the bill up, so it wasn't that I was, in my case, that I was consciously tailoring myself. But I think the reasonableness of the bill, both the balance of the bill, is shown by the
amendment. Something else I want the committee to know, and we will be disbanded by the time the final report for NCSL gets here, so I need to tell you, they have given me a call. They were very impressed with the Alaska legislature. They were impressed by the open door policy, the fact that no one turned them down to see them, that it was easy to see people. And the comment they had was on our committee reports in the journal, how we put do pass or do not pass. Very few legislatures do that, and that we're open to the public immediately on how we stand on things. And they said that was a real big plus in our favor. And all the subcommittees and the fact that people were running around from 7 to 7 but would always be willing to talk to them was a first for this staff that do legislate. They have not encountered a legislature as open as we were on this subject since the NCSL has been into effect. And they were that will be reflected in their final report, which I thought was kind of interesting.
What other issues do we face as a
Oh, Representative Phillips.
We've got a few more here.
And all of them tonight.
Yes. Sit up, Senator Jefferson.
Well, Madam Chair.
Please.
Okay, we sort of set, managing the time for the committee and stuff, but we do have a code of ethics here. It's short. It's 3.5 pages long. If you want to go through it today, that would be fine. Or maybe we can do it in our next meeting. So if you're really working hard, I might suggest look at this next couple days, maybe have a meeting tomorrow, whatever the committee's pleasure, and then we can look at this, make any recommendations. I have no pride in authorship. My intent is to have the committee introduce a code of ethics on behalf of both bodies. Then on Thursday or Friday, Mr. Berry has been working on uniform rule changes, and there's going to be some proposed changes in the uniform rules. And I'd like for the committee to take a look at that. If we agree to those changes, then we can recommend it to the legislature. And that should pretty well wrap her up as far as the charges of this committee to the legislature.
Yeah, we could approve this tonight.
Well, I don't know.
Read this, Representative Phillips.
Now, one thing I want to add. This code of ethics is a takeoff or spinoff, or whatever you want to call it, after the United States Congress. May say that's good, and then again you may say it's bad, considering what has happened to certain members of Congress. But this is basically a guide. There are 10 commandments of do's and don'ts. And also, I want where's Mike Ford? Mike, he had that suggestion about immunity putting in here.
Oh, wait a minute! No, that was that suggestion was to go in the other bill.
We decided we didn't need it.
Yeah, but we will have a letter. But we will have a letter in camp dealing with that assumption.
We decided last night you did not want that in the conflict bill. Well, I guess I misunderstood it. You decided this last night.
And Joe, we have passed a motion to have a letter in camp dealing with that subject matter to go with the conflict of interest legislation.
Yeah. Oh, is that the language that, I know he's been working on that all day, but I wasn't sure what, I mean, working on it 2 days.
Yeah, but then I asked Mr. Ford, it doesn't matter which one it goes to, and at least my impression was it didn't matter, so I said put it in here, that model language.
Yeah, I thought it went to the conflict.
Did I misinterpret it?
I did, too. I thought it was
He was rewriting it because
you corrected me, so I thought I was wrong.
The language he had, which was lifted from a model bill, referred to the legislative ethics, so he was going to have to change that to legislative conflict of interest. But I think it went to the other bill, the one we just passed. But that's all right. The next meeting, we'll just we have to have a letter of intent tonight.
What I'd like you to do, Representative Miller, if you could, is present that as a formal motion at the next meeting and with the language in front of us, and it can always be done.
Yeah.
So then we can have our draft amended by the special committee.
What now you're talking about? I'm sorry, I lost here.
There was a short
three-line section,
a three or four-line section on immunity that was presented to the committee last night. And you looked at it. It was simple in form, and it simply said, help me with this, Representative Miller, that this bill, legislative immunity...
Well, what we're saying is this doesn't supersede the Constitution. That's what everyone else did.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, self-evident.
Why don't we wait until we see it in front of us, and then we can come and look at it. Okay, we have the ethics. Yes, sir. Please.
I have no problem with the Phillips' language on ethics with a couple of reservations. First, I'd like to be sure that the language is consistent with the bill.
As you know, look, it's 4683. We went through about four drafts since that date, maybe five drafts.
So that would be one thing. And then I'd like to know whether the... I'm a little uneasy about the blind trust provisions. I assume 3950 is the ACOG financial disclosure. I'm a little uneasy about whether, when we say a member of the legislature may establish a blind trust with assets of their control may be transferred to avoid a conflict of interest, whether we're substantively changing kind of in a backdoor way the APOC financial disclosure law, relaxing some provisions where, you know, we're going to have a whole and open.
What I'd like to suggest to the committee, if we could, because this is a 4-6 draft, what I'd like to do is recommend that this go to the reviser, and he look at this and relate it to the bill we just passed out. Mesh them together, get the language equal, and then come back to us.
And then introduce as a separate bill?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fine with me. Like I said, I don't have prior authorship.
Right. Then I would like to eliminate anything that's duplicated or just mesh the language and so that it's the same.
I can't afford it.
Everybody is leaving us. Why is everybody leaving? We're not.
The excitement's over.
The excitement's over.
Okay, Madam Chairman, I agree. We'll have two bills.
Yes.
Right. And when are we going to meet again?
Why don't we take tomorrow off?
Tomorrow's Wednesday.
Yes. Why don't we meet again on Thursday?
Julia. Then we'll introduce the bills on Friday. Is that what you're saying?
Is that okay?
Fine. And then, I have the same blind trust worry that the citizen has. I think I'm kind of an anti-blind trust person.
Me too. You know what your problem is?
You
live in Juneau where everyone loves legislators. You should come live where we live.
Yeah, they hate them.
Yes, you are the enemy where I come from.
What's that got to do with blind trust?
And anything else. They do not have blind trust, and they would like everything to own blind trust.
Yeah, let's do that. Code of Ethics and the Rules.
Okay.
Thursday.
Well, blind trust is actually a hiding trust.
But this is the way it is on everything. All righty, let's adjourn until 5 o'clock Thursday. Thank you very much. I should have had champagne for everybody tonight.
No, let's do it Friday.
All right, Friday.
All right.
I have a question for you.
Like Yogi Bear says, it ain't over with, so it's over.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Meaning the ball game.
Say that again.
Really?
Are you? Are you going to have Jens ask when to draft in the mesh?
I will be glad to do it.
Okay.
Somebody going to pick these all up?
I talked to Rules to let me know. Are you on Rules? To let me know when it's going to be calendar, but I'm going to do something on it sort of back on Mason.
Oh, that'd be good. There's a lot of history to that bill.
Yeah.
42.